You're listening to Stirring the Pot on Voice of Vashon 101.9 FMLP in beautiful uptown Vashon Island, Washington. I'm Linda Nygaard, and
I'm Atomic Conaway.
Oh, this Atomic Conaway.
That was being international today.
Okay, we'll have some fun, I can tell today. Yeah. Well, gosh, you know, this is really different for us because usually when we come in the studio, it's empty for half an hour and we get to play with, you know, our voices and our mics and things for a little bit. But right now we're in I guess, the very end of the Give Big weekend. And there have been some very interesting interviews and a lot of donations. And I just want to put a plug in for, you know, Voice of Vashon, because we couldn't do it without you. And if you've a mind, we would really appreciate your donations. And, you know, you wouldn't be donating to Stirring the Pot per se. However, if you donated during our hour, someone might notice that.
That's true. And we might get like a free squeegee or a mouse pad.
Or a fly swatter or something.
A free mouse pad.
Yeah, that would be nice. It would be really nice. So anyway, we came in to have our show and we had to hurry up and set up at 2:59 and 30 seconds.
Yes, color us frazzled.
Yeah, and we have no time for rehearsal or any ideas of what we're going to talk about, except that we do have rhubarb on the mind today.
That's right. And you know what? Thank God, Linda. One thing. We are professionals.
I know. We can do this,
We
Tom.
Are professional amateurs.
We can do this. I just know it. You know, we missed our show a week ago, I guess it was. And we had to cancel it for a number of reasons, or postpone it, I guess. So today's kind of a makeup show because Tom's not usually here this early in the month.
That's true. My biological clock and
the symposium rhythms.
It's like that.
Well, then there's the psychological issues of timing. You know.
It's true.
I know, and you do have difficulty with that.
Among so many things.
So, well, last time I talked to you, Tom, you were busy planning gardening.
Yes.
Digging up a few things, putting in a new thing or two, mm-hmm. and thinking about what's going to come. So how's the gardening going?
It's good. Today I made something for us, which I'll share in just a sec. But I realized I had it in the oven, mm-hmm. and I also realized, as one has on Vashon, I had an appointment to pick up composted manure.
Yes.
Excuse me, composted horse manure. Let's specify here.
Oh, yes, let's, please. It's not chicken.
No, at Ghost Doll Farm, which mm-hmm. is a really great charity on the island that are animal rescue.
Oh.
And they have like big animals like horses and, mm-hmm. Well, not cattle, but they have goats and
big
pigs and things
big
like that.
Big four-footed things.
Exactly.
Four-footed things.
And and you can, when they get it enough, they have this composted manure you can go get. So anyway, I was doing that and I realized, oh shoot, I got this thing in the oven. So I called my friend Kurt luckily he's just down the street from me. And mm-hmm. It's always bad when you start off your text with, Kurt, I know this is so lame, but
and I'm so sorry to bother you.
Yeah. But can you take something out of the oven for me in about 20 minutes? All right. And so he did. So he saved our treat and our featured crop.
Oh, that's great. Thank you, Kurt.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
And this is where I'm so glad I called Kurt, because the timing was, it wasn't ready. Mm. And he knew enough to, like.
So he knows.
He knows. Yeah. He's a baker.
Yeah.
So he tested it. I'll tell you what it is.
We should tell who Kurt is.
Oh, yeah. Kurt Timmermeister is a farmer on the island and really a really great entrepreneur, I would call him an agricultural mm-hmm. entrepreneur, if there's such a thing, where he's done everything from make award-winning cheeses to.
I mean, he's a brilliant kitchen guy.
He really is. He teaches. He has classes in his kitchen.
Yeah. How would people find his classes?
Kurtwood Farms.
Yes. Yeah. KurtwoodFarms.com.
Yeah. I think he just launched summer classes.
I saw that yesterday.
And, they're really fun.
Sound great.
It's a real thorough demo and participation. And then there's always lunch. And then you usually go home.
Plenty of food.
Exactly. Yeah. I always like it when he has a woman, a Charlie, with deep sugar cakes. I always love it because she makes so much. And he goes, oh, I got some cake left over. You want some?
You better take some home.
Exactly.
So Kurt rescued the treat. We're gonna
rescued our rhubarb bread. Think of like a zucchini bread, but with rhubarb.
Yum. My mouth is watering for rhubarb, and I've got to get some because it's just a wonderful. But we'll talk about rhubarb in a bit.
Yeah.
I want to hear a little about the garden and the chickens and what's going on in the greenhouse.
Oh yeah. So I have a big greenhouse that's actually is a what they call a high tunnel hoop house for the most part, but it's like a 30 by 70.
And it's huge.
So I got tomatoes in there, and that's good. That extra, 10 degrees of heat really pay off for tomatoes.
So what kind of tomatoes did you do?
I've got a slicer called Celebrity. Mm-hmm. I have, I like big butts. No, I mean, I like big tomato butts. I like big slicers.
I do too.
And what's
if
really,
they're good,
because
some
good.
Big slicers are not flavorful.
No, or they're mushy. They're pretty,
mushy,
but mushy.
Or dry.
Or they mold out before they ripen. I've got Celebrity is just, and I have one called Jet Setter, and they're more of a more modern tomato that is firm and flavorful and a nice size that ripens probably 10 to 15 to 20 days before big slicers.
So like a good sandwich tomato.
Yeah, they're great sandwich, great salad.
Yeah.
And then a lot of my friends are totally into cherry tomatoes. I always have cherry tomatoes. I don't have to plant those. I have enough friends that go, do you want some cherry tomatoes? I go, yeah, I do.
I love cherry tomatoes. Yeah. My favorites are those little orange ones. Orange ones shaped like pears,
kind of.
Oh, they're so good.
Oh, yeah. And then the yellow pear.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. They're like candy. You can just eat them and eat them and eat them. And they're good for you.
They're really good.
Yeah.
There's another one. Purple Cherokee, I think, is another one I have that's really good.
I was in Tacoma this morning talking with a person who just planted their garden this weekend. And it's a huge garden. They planted sunchokes.
Wait, excuse me. You actually drove into Tacoma today. And you are back by 2?
I had
2,
yeah.
That's impressive.
It was not by choice. It was a thing I had to do.
That's like living on the edge.
It was, and I was worried because I thought, because that ferry stops at noon or 11:30 or whatever, and I was aiming for that one to come back, but I missed
it.
So I got on the 140.
Okay.
And I came over, and it was fine.
Excellent.
He was planting his garden, and he planted sunchokes, and he's really looking forward to growing those sunchokes,
also known as Jerusalem artichokes.
Yes. And he's never had them before, but boy, he was talking about the garden, and he lives in a like a house that doesn't really have a big garden, so he's got tubs, and he showed me a bunch of pictures of it, and it's just amazing to see what things people are growing. And his tomato stash is going to be to die for. He's got some brilliant sounding tomatoes. And he
really
was
good.
Telling me about a cherry tomato, or the size of a cherry tomato, and I can't remember what the name of it was, but he said when it ripens, it's sort of all kinds of rainbow colors. But when they're sitting on the vine and they're not ripe, they look gray and disgusting. He said, I grew them last year, and he said, I thought, these are going to be terrible. And then he left them there, and they turned into these brilliant rainbow-colored little cherry tomatoes, he said, that were really, really good.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
We have to do a little research and find out what those are, and maybe we can have those.
There was one called a blue Smurf. It sounds like that one a little bit, believe it or not.
Like a blueberry tomato?
I think people breed plants just for the naming conventions they get to get to honor them
with.
Well,
that's fun.
There's a Berkeley tie-dye is a really good tomato. Tie-dye.
Did you ever grow it?
I grew it last year. And one called Anis Noir, and that's really good. Mm-hmm. It's a dark, weird colored thing, a tomato.
Yeah, I eagerly await rhubarb season in the wintertime, and then all summer long, I'm jonesing for good tomatoes. Well, oh man,
I am totally with you. In fact, usually, like if I had graphs, my bacon purchases quadruple starting about June or July or August.
August and September. Yeah. However, I do have to say, in fear of local gardeners, that I've never had a good tomato like you get in the South here.
Really?
Well,
you know, maybe it's just because you're so distracted by the tomato for the mosquitoes and the humidity and that sort of
and
thing.
And something good is excellent.
If something is funny, it's distracting you from that discomfort.
There's just something about that heat that they, you know, there's something about the South as Billy
Bob
Thornton says.
Even Jersey.
Oh, yeah,
Jersey
true,
tomatoes.
True, yeah, they're different. But, I mean, I'm not belittling Washington tomatoes at all. I love them.
My mother and I went to Spain.
Mr. O'Brien is here, too.
Oh, hello. Sorry, I just had to poke in here.
Yeah.
But we went to Spain in about 1965, I think it was. The tomatoes in Spain were over the top.
Did they?
They were fabulous. But I must confess, we said, how are you serving these? They said, oh, well, it's really simple. We just slice them and we put a little oil over
them. Olive oil.
We just put a little oil over the top. They didn't say olive oil. They said
oil.
So my mother and I, when we got back to Montana,
yeah,
we sliced up some tomatoes and we took some vegetable oil and poured over the top and we went, yuck.
That's not so good.
It was only a few years ago that I figured out that they were using olive oil.
Well, you know, that was before the years before we were so sophisticated to know about olive oil.
Another thing, speaking of Kurt Timmermeister, he used to have these farm dinners. And there was a dinner once where he had, oh my gosh, it was truly an incredible rainbow of big sliced tomatoes. And it was just solid, every color of the rainbow,
like
tomato
a platter.
On a huge platter with sea salt and cracked pepper. But the thing that was different than the olive oil is he had clarified butter drizzled all over it.
Oh, dear.
That was really good.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Speaking of butter, I was reading some articles today about food, as I always do, while I was waiting for the ferry. Mm-hmm. And there was something about my favorite thing to fix my mother on Mother's Day, and I was reading it, and it was buttered steak.
Okay,
so drop a marble
color me
in your
interested.
Heart.
Yeah, color me riveted. Go right now.
I know. But it was a, you know, an easy recipe, and it was just, it was steak done in butter and then melted butter on top of it. And
There's a butter thing going on now where people are doing all sorts of stuff with it. Like,
I know.
One of the recent things I saw, an ice cream shop in, I think, of course, where else, Brooklyn, was doing, you know, you have dipped soft serve cones.
Mm-hmm.
They were dipping them in butter.
In butter? Ice cream in butter?
The ice cream and butter.
Well,
I'd be tempted.
Yeah. I mean, same family.
Yeah. Usually when you have butter and ice cream, means you over-churned it. But
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. And, you know, people are doing butter boards now. A charcuterie board, only it's butter on the board, and then it's spread. You have a little jam on one corner and some herbs on another corner, and serve it with crackers.
I'm doing buttered thighs, butt, and waist. I'm spreading them on my
on yourself. It works. Uh-huh.
So I have to throw out one more thing.
Okay.
Charcuterie board. Mm-hmm. We were recently in Ashland, Oregon.
Yes, you were, you lucky ducks.
And the Rogue Creamery.
Oh,
gosh. Are you aware of that?
Very much so.
How could you not
We stopped by there. And we spent well over $100
getting some
of their blue cheese.
Blue cheese, it's hands down the best.
It international competition last year, it won the best cheese, not the best blue cheese.
I know.
The best cheese.
Like in the world.
In the world.
Internationally.
Do you know,
it's a small world because one of my friends in Seattle who, Lincoln Briney, he's a singer, but he was, in recent years, when he was in Ashland, he was working or managing that shop. And so he lives in Ashland now, and he was the one that turned me onto it. I didn't know about it until then.
Well, you know, it started, it was a little tiny place. It was like unknown. And I lived in Oregon at the time, and it was a very sort of small distribution. And those of us in the know, if you will, you know, with the little restaurants and the food world knew about it, but it wasn't available really right away in stores like you can get it now. And I think you can probably order it directly from them. Yeah, it's, and you know, I don't think they have a product that I don't like, but that blue cheese will not, it just, it's out of the park. It really is good.
It is the best ever. We brought it home in our suitcase, and I did put it in.
I was going to say, how'd your suitcase smell?
I did put it in the Ziploc bag so that it did not odoriferize my suitcase.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah. And, you know, blue cheese is so versatile in its uses. You know, I mean, you can obviously put it in the salads and stuff, but a little bit of melty blue cheese in a grilled cheese sandwich or a little...
Over a steak, that's what
the blue
me
cheese
think
on
it.
A steak is to die for.
You know, I like, it speaks to Washington, but as much Oregon, like a nice pairing or a drag tripling of ingredients or Oregon or Washington pears like a Kamis or a Bosque, blue cheese, and then hazelnuts, toasted hazelnuts on top.
Very local
and super super good.
I've made poached pears with blue cheese and hazelnuts. Oh my, they're good. I mean, obviously you don't put the blue cheese on it when you're poaching the pears, but poach the pears. And then when they're
do you chill them or do you do it? You eat them warm?
You can do it both ways. I've done it both ways, but my preference is to eat them warm and have the blue cheese just a little bit melty, but still chunky. Not hot, you know, and then just sprinkle some hazelnuts. Oh my. So, so good.
Totally works.
And it's one of those.
And Mingleman has really great roasted hazelnuts if you ever need them on island. You know,
do
if
they?
You don't. Yeah, they have them in there. They roast them daily.
You know, speaking of local. I was at Snapdragon this weekend for a series of plays that we were doing.
Oh, man.
Of
I
which I was
that.
In one. Anyway, it was quite wonderful. And Adam and Megan made granola. It is so good. It is so good. And, you know, I mean, oats, I don't think is local, but it was made locally and it was just so good. And I just wanted to say that. I don't, it has nothing to do with anything except it's really good.
It's a good reminder that granola isn't that hard to make on your own, you know? And you can, it's so elevated from what you buy in a store.
Well, also the bakery.
The bakery has killer
granola.
Killer granola.
And I don't eat very much granola, you know, and I wonder why, because almost everyone I know says they eat it every morning for
breakfast.
It's
a great gift. Really,
it is a good gift, isn't it?
During Christmas, I have my little goodie bags of things I give people, and it's usually, some of it is granola. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of good gifts.
Yeah.
Do you know, okay, so I have a friend who moved away to another country.
And you weren't responsible for any of that, I suspect.
I didn't scare them that badly, I'm sure.
No restraining orders?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
Anyway, they moved away to a different country, and they had someone else taking care of their property here in Vashon. And now they've decided they're not coming home. And so they're going to just stay overseas.
Wow.
Given the, you know, situation we're dealing with, which we don't need to talk about. But anyway, they were quite known for throwing some really incredible parties and entertaining, and the food was unbelievable, and we all miss them terribly, but I support their decision. Anyway, they decided that I needed their supply of wine because they weren't going to drink it.
These are good people.
These are good people. So see, they weren't too afraid of me.
No.
So last week I got delivered to my little porch a case of really beautiful red wines from other places and so I'm just saying that was like the over the top hostess gift.
Yeah.
You know, like a
party on Garth.
Yeah.
I'll be over.
You can come over. Yeah. Yeah. You can come over, Truman. So, gifts. That's a
boy. That's that. What a fun thing to surprise to get.
I know, but you know, it's kind. It was bittersweet.
Yeah, you'd rather.
I'd much rather drink it with them at their house.
Yeah,
you know, but
Where did they settle? Do you remember?
Oh, it doesn't matter.
Okay, like country. I'm not asking for the address. Okay,
They're in Central Europe.
Okay, like
they're close to everything.
Spain, France, Germany.
Somewhere around there. Yeah, somewhere. They're not in Italy, I can tell you that. Yeah,
all right.
They're not there. They're not in the booth.
They're in the witness protection program.
These are criminals.
That's what we weren't going to tell you, Tom.
Sorry. Oh, now I get it. Sorry,
because
I'm a little slow.
Because he's so, what's that word? Inquisitive. And how do you, I can't lie, so quit asking questions.
I wonder why she was giving me the hook sign.
Yeah. Where are we? Like, what have I been doing?
My next question was, okay, wait, here with poised inquiry. Hey, Linda, what have you been up to?
Well, I actually have been not up to much.
Yeah?
I really haven't. I've baked enough pies for a little while and done
you
doing
have.
That. Yeah,
you're I've coconut been, cream queen.
But now that rhubarb season is here, I have to do that. So, and you promised
what
me...
What season?
Rhubarb.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
You promised me some rhubarb, so I'm going to come in. Get some when it's ready.
I did.
And
I was going to bring it today, but I thought it'd be better to pick it when you want it.
When you want it. Yeah. Because sometimes you don't have time, and I won't have time for the next 3 days to do it.
Exactly.
So it's very busy.
Is your theater career calling you or?
Oh, not right now.
Okay.
But boy, isn't it fun? It was a series of 10, I think 10 short plays, and they were never played anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And it was readings of these 10-minute plays that had a beginning and an end and mm-hmm. an arc and really interesting characters. There were some funny ones. There were some sad ones. There were some, I'm not sure what that one was, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was really, really fun. And we did it at Snapdragon in the Black Cat Cabaret.
Oh, nice.
So we sold out the house both nights. So that was really fun.
That's really great.
And we had the famous pizza to eat from there, you know, that was
that.
Good. So yeah, it was really fun. But I there are a lot of really good actors on this island. Mm-hmm. Really good actors. Theater is alive here. Mm-hmm. And so
I need to break in once again.
Okay,
Rhubarb, I have to ask you, while I was in Ashland, you know I was in Ashland, Oregon.
Yes, I do.
Yeah. So while I was there
have you ever been to Ashland?
I have, yes. While I was there, I had two specialty drinks just on the fly. You know,
yeah.
I never do that.
Yeah.
I never do that. I had one lemony thing that mm-hmm. you should have out on the beach when it's 90 degrees. But the other I had a rhubarb compote. Would that be the word?
Like a saucy thing?
Yeah. No, well, it was in the drink. I mean, it was, but so it was like a fizzy,
like,
tall
you
know, kind of glass thing, but it was rhubarb.
Was it chunky in there or was it clear juice?
Yeah, it was kind of clear.
And I had one of those.
Have you had those?
I had one of those at Ramble one day for brunch, I think it was, or lunch or something, but recently, and they just called it, it was non-alcoholic, and it was called rhubarb fizz or something.
I was just going to say fizz seems to be likely.
So good.
I think so. It was,
it was
just kind of fizzy,
good.
But it definitely had alcohol in it. But it was delicious.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never heard of that before.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I love rhubarb drinks.
No, that's good. Did you see any Shakespeare when you were down there?
We went to the Oregon Shakespeare Festival and did not see one Shakespeare.
You didn't, but you saw some plays.
You know what we saw?
What?
Come From Away.
Oh, about the airline pilot.
Yes.
And
how
the airline
was it?
People.
Is that why you went?
It
for that
truly
play?
Was.
Yeah.
It truly was.
Yeah.
And it was fabulous.
Was it so good?
Fabulous.
I got to get back down there and see some more plays. I haven't been down there in years.
Me either.
And there's great food and it's a different
it's
environment.
It's a walkable town.
It's a walkable town.
Yeah. And,
and it's fairly affordable.
Yeah.
I don't know how it is now with everything,
it's a little spendy, but also the cabaret is going,
mm-hmm.
and we had never been to the cabaret until about 2-3 years ago.
Mm.
Fabulous place.
Wow.
Fabulous.
So that's not in the
that's not part of the
theater.
USF, no,
well,
okay.
Well, Tom, maybe you and I can hitch a ride when they go again.
Yeah, let's do that.
Since they already know the way and everything,
exactly.
We'll help pay for gas.
Sure.
Which
you're
is
on.
Like a big investment now.
Yeah, I was going to say, go to the bank first. Yeah.
You know what? I saw gas in Tacoma for $6.69.
Oh, yeah.
In Tacoma.
Yeah.
That's higher than it is here.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Oh, it's just crazy. So anyway, back to what we've been doing. in the cooking world, I've been baking a lot, and now I'm getting ready for a couple more pies. But I've also been experimenting with some Korean food.
Oh.
And what I did was, you know, those really thinly sliced ribs they have that are mostly meat and kind of fat with a little mm-hmm. oval bone.
Like an umami bomb.
Yeah, and marinating that in soy sauce and some ginger and some brown sugar and some other hot spices. And then...
How do you serve it? Over rice or...
Well, I'm sort of not eating a lot of carbs right now, mm-hmm. so you would, yes. Mm-hmm. And then I made some blistered green beans with garlic, like the Koreans do. And it was just delicious. And I was just hungry for Korean food, so I just looked up recipes on the web. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like I know what I'm doing, but it wasn't hard. It was really fun and quite delicious. In fact, I'm having leftovers tonight. And I've been...
Was there an impetus for this going toward Korean food?
No, I just kind of... No, not really. Mm-hmm. I just kind of was hungry for it. And I have... There's great Korean food in Tacoma.
There is.
There's a great Korean grocery store.
Mm-hmm. In Tacoma. Yes, I've been there. Yeah. And I was just thinking about it the other day, and I thought, I wonder if I could do some of that at home. And, you know, you really can. I do think those ribs, I did them on the stove in my cast iron skillet, mm-hmm. and they would be much better on the grill, which I didn't do.
Can you do a grill in your apartment?
Yeah. Yeah, we have a patio area with a nice grill.
Good.
But I was too lazy. So I just did it in my kitchen.
You have to leave the door open. You have to walk down.
Yeah, and you got to go up and down and open doors and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I love my cast iron cooking. And it was as close as it can be without being fire.
Sure.
You know? So I did that. And then, I don't know, nothing. It really, I've just been busy doing stuff. It's summertime, you know?
I know. It is that time where it's sort of like it's like
Finally it's summer.
It's like turning a tanker around it's nice now and we can do stuff outside and we can
I know.
Think about.
And the other day I went outside and I had on my my black sweatpants and my black sweatshirt and a sweatshirt jacket thinking, "Oh, you know, like my habitual thing mm-hmm. that you do because it's been so cold." And oh my goodness, I got hot. I mean, it's been warm.
Yeah, I ate out on my, I've been eating out on my porch, my little,
oh, nice.
My little outdoor cafe.
Nice.
And it's,
I like your outdoor cafe.
Yeah, it's nice. It's
very
been
nice.
Really,
yeah.
Yeah, at first I wasn't doing it because I thought it was too a little chilly out there. But nope, it was delightful.
Yeah, yeah. Have you been out to eat in town or anything?
You know, did we talk about this before? I went to
Ovashon.
Yeah.
No, we didn't talk about that.
Yeah. It was they were having like a soft opening
thing.
And a friend had an invitation and included me and mm-hmm. it was really good. It was what I love about it is the sort of incongruity of the decor and the
menu. I know
menu.
It's like a Asian cowboy bar.
You expect Miss Kitty. Yeah, I love it. It's like Miss Kitty to go like belly up to the bars, boys.
And have your pho.
Yeah, have your pho. It's this great Western really sweet and charming and, mm-hmm. and inviting environment mm-hmm. of
it's like, really cute
like a Western saloon
and then
they have all this great Asian food mm-hmm. Pan-Asian food mm-hmm. Some Thai, some Chinese, some mm-hmm. you know, I think I had tamarind chicken. My friends had what did they have? They had a stir-fried vegetable dish, really good spring rolls with shrimp. That was yummy.
You had tamarind chicken?
I did.
I have some frozen tamarind pulp, and I have some frozen passion fruit pulp.
Mm.
And I'm thinking, obviously I'm thinking pie, because when I was in Australia, I had passion fruit pie for the first time in my life. And it it's to die for good. And it's like a lemon pie. It's a meringue thing.
They love on British Baking Company, because it's not an ingredient we tend to use in American
we don't think about
baking
it.
Or cooking.
Right.
And on the British Baking Company, it's kind of like, what are you making? What am I making? A passion fruit, dot, dot, dot. Oh, what are you making? Passion fruit ribs.
Something.
What am I making? Passion fruit, or, you know.
And a passion fruit cake.
Frappe. And I'm making a passion. It's like they use passion fruit a lot.
Well, they're everywhere over there and down there. And they're beautiful and they're delicious. There's really nothing wrong with passion fruit.
Yeah.
Nothing.
I think the Hawaiian name is Lily Koi.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. It's just because a friend of mine told me that once. Because I have a passion fruit growing, a non-fruiting one, but growing by my back door.
Well, what's the point?
I've been trying to get it. It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
And it's fragrant. So I guess if beauty's not enough for you, Linda, I'm not sure
I thought you meant a non-fruiting one. It was designed that way, or is it just that it can't adjust to the climate?
The variety isn't, I get fruit, but it doesn't ripen.
Oh.
But I found out there's a fruit that does ripen in our climate I can bring it into my greenhouse.
Oh.
And just that extra 10 degrees, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll do it. And then we can try some recipes out.
Some passion fruit something.
Passion fruit.
Yeah. It's really good. So you're kind of inspiring me to think about that. But I don't really know how to cook with tamarind. I mean, I know it's a big thing in Asian cooking.
Yeah.
I've had it. And so I saw it at the Asian cooking store.
Did you see
it?
Was it in a paste or was it in a bean?
It's a pulp.
Yeah.
And it's in, you know, what we would call a Ziploc bag, except it's all sealed up and it's in my freezer. It was frozen.
Sometimes in some markets, they sell that fresh.
Mm.
And it's like, it looks like a giant, think of like a lima bean in its shell, like intact lima beans in the pod.
Oh.
And then, but like double the size.
Okay.
And it's and double the thickness.
So then you have to peel it and process it somehow.
And take the seeds out. And yeah.
Well, that would be, maybe we should try to do that. That might be an interesting experiment.
It makes a really good drink too. Like I was in Costa Rica once and it was a real popular drink, tamarindo.
Mm-hmm.
It actually reminds,
I've had it in drinks. Yeah. Oh yeah. But I've never cooked it.
Kind of reminds you of a tropical Coca-Cola.
Oh yeah. And if you need to pretend you're at the beach.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have an adventure coming up tomorrow, which I'm pretty excited about. And that is that.
Tell us more, Tawanda. What is it?
Tawanda. you know, Celine, the other Stirring the Pot host.
Yes.
And I and Heidi Skrypek and Sharon Briskman are going to Koza, the Turkish market in Kirkland tomorrow.
Wow.
And so I'm just saying this as a little prelude to Celine and my next show. And what our assignment is, speaking of things we've never cooked with before, is we're each to buy something, some ingredient, some spice, some sauce, some something that we don't know anything about and haven't cooked with before, and then go home and cook with it and bring it back to report. And see, so there'll be four different experiences, and I'm really looking forward to that. So that's kind of, you know, my food involvement lately has been more around, I don't know how to do this, you know, except for the pies. I do know how to. And, you know, we were going to talk about pies in particular, the things that we've learned about the new pie situation. So,
yeah, what have you learned, lady?
Well, I've been baking pies for a long time, as you know,
mm-hmm.
as so have you. And the thing we call blind baking, for those of you who don't know, means that you bake the pie shell before you put the filling in. Well, I've had pretty good, I mean, I can do that. But I was watching our favorite chef the other day, a couple weeks ago, Adam Byatt. And he was making a pre-baked pie shell for something. I forget what he was doing. But the thing that he did, they always tell you to poke a few holes in it with a fork so that the air can come out and it releases all the steam, right? So I've always done that. And then he poked what must have been 10 million holes in that. He just poked he poked up all the sides. And he said, if you don't do that, it's either going to shrink or it's going to wither, you know.
Or buckle.
Or buckle. And so the next pie I made, I did that. And it was like over and over and over and over.
And it really made a difference.
Absolutely made a huge difference.
And it didn't sink through. That's kind of the weird part, isn't it?
Well, it didn't sink through. But those holes are tiny when you do it with a fork. You know, no, it did not sink through. And I do believe it's the first time in my pie baking history that I have baked a custard pie that had a really crisp bottom crust. And I was just so pleased. So I thought I would share that little tidbit with people who are interested in baking pies, because it changed. It was life-changing for me.
That's a good tip.
Like, put way more holes in there than you think you need. I probably only poked it like 6 or 8 times when I would do the holes, you know, just kind of dot, 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 and you're done.
Yeah.
And he just went wild with it. So it was worth it. And the other thing that I have learned lately is, this is from a different pie baker, is that butter situation. When you're putting the butter in, you know, there's a lot of different ways that people put the butter in. Some people grate the butter frozen. Some people chop it up. Some people, some people use oil. I don't do that. But and it says in every recipe, it says make the butter about pea size or, you know, so.
Yeah.
Well, I really like to leave bigger chunks because I think sometimes you can really get a taste treat when you're eating the pie. So I would just caution people that you don't need to worry so much about that butter.
Right. It can be, I kind of think the same thing. Like, it can be anywhere from a almond size to a pea size to a lentil, you know.
Well,
the
or to a shred. You
a
know,
shred,
I know
sure.
a woman who absolutely insists on grating frozen butter, and her pies are stupendous.
Yeah,
I don't need to. I'm not going to do that, but her pies are really good.
I have another tip for your blind baking. So when we talk about blind baking, you're baking just the pie shell and no interior or filling,
right?
Because you want a crispy crust, and then whatever the. Usually it's for like cream pies is what you do, or pecan pie or pumpkin pie. But one thing you can do with the crust is after you've docked it or poked holes in it with a fork, you can put it in the freezer for about 15 minutes. And 15 to 20.
Oh, yes.
I usually put it in the freezer prior to me baking. Then I put the preheat on in the stove, and when it reaches temperature at preheat, I take it out of the freezer and put it into the.
Yes.
And it keeps your crust is kind of stable. It tends to work.
In fact, I do that every time.
Yeah.
You know, you really need to get that crust cold before you put it in the oven. Yeah.
So basically, it kind of firms it a little.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It firms the butter up again, you know, because the butter's gotten warm and kind of wilty, you know.
And then by the time it goes into a rapid hot oven, what happens is it's like by the time it melts, it's like, oh, wait, I've already formed my structure is already here. I already have structure. I can't slump.
I can't.
You know?
Yeah. Well, for our listening audience, I need to tell you that Tom has brought an incredible treat for us that is, I'll post it in a photograph. But it is
a quick bread, you know, much like a zucchini bread.
It's called rhubarb quick bread.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it's so good and so beautiful.
And then I on top of it is a compote, which is really really easy. I took like 2 cups of we'll show the recipe with the quick bread, which has chunks of. Rhubarb in it, and also like a lot of orange zest. But then I put on top like a little sauce, and I just a couple cups of rhubarb, some orange zest, a little bit of sugar, a little bit of water, and then I'll just put a really small amount of cornstarch when it gets going to just add a little thickener. And it really makes it go. Oh, and a little lemon juice.
Oh, that's what it is. I was going to ask you if there was ginger in it.
No, no ginger.
Ginger would be good in it too, I think.
Yeah, it would.
If you wanted to experiment. So this is so good.
You talked about zest. I see some big chunks of
You know, I did say zest. And, you know, Truman, this is why we love you. You are a super sleuth. It isn't really zest. I just said zest for ease.
You chopped.
What's that?
You chopped.
I put in orange peels. I chopped up orange peels.
Yeah.
I have a jar of orange peels that I just once I
tell people about that. That's a really wonderful thing that you do.
Anytime I use orange peels like basically raisins or even more. I use it the most of any sort of thing for a flavoring when I'm making stuff. Mm-hmm. And so what I do is whenever I have an orange, and I usually like an orange a day, mm-hmm. I take the peel and I just slice it into little batons, little tiny slivers, you know?
Matchstick kind
of things. Matchstick, perfect, yeah. Matchstick. And then I put a cup of sugar and a cup of water and I get that dissolved and simmering and I throw the orange peels in it. And then I just put a lid on it and then I just shut it off and I just mm-hmm. let it sort of steep in there. And the next day I have another orange. I do the same thing in the same pot with the same amount. When it looks like we're needing more liquid.
But are you, okay, that's what I was going to ask.
Then I add another cup of sugar and another cup of water.
After you've put three or four or five oranges.
Exactly.
Depending on how it looks.
Yeah. And so I'll probably have eventually six or seven orange peels, peels from six or seven oranges in mm-hmm. there. And then I just put it in then when it's translucent and pliable and flavorful, and a lot of cook shows always talk about the pith being bitter. Well, that's just a bunch of bunk. I was going to use BS, the full term, but it's never like you can eat, mm-mm. you can eat that on, maybe it is on a lemon or a lime, but it's not on an orange.
And it's not good when you take a bite of it. Like I have done it to taste the pith.
Well,
and it's kind of bitter, but it's not an interfering bitter when you're cooking.
Yeah, I don't find it that way. I find I just put it this way, is I don't scrape the peel. Like a lot of...
I don't either.
And there's another thing that they have you do, like almost every recipe, and it's ridiculous. And I can't believe, it's like one of those things where you're going like, is anybody really paying attention to you know, I'm no recipe guru, mm-hmm. but... I can't figure out, like, every orange peel recipe says you pour boiling water over it and then you drain it and you do it a couple times.
Why?
And all you're doing is you're removing the...
Taking flavor. The flavor.
Yeah, the flavor.
And the
orange.
Oil.
Exactly. It would be like, it's the same thing. I liken it to making stock and pouring out the water and then putting fresh water
and
in it.
And doing it again.
Yeah, so don't do that. Just steep it in there.
Well, and so, okay, so you have this supply of these orange rinds.
Yeah, that I
do you
dice
then,
up.
Then do you keep those in the fridge?
Yeah.
And then you can just, I mean, I've had so many things at your house with that orange.
Yeah, and they last forever.
Pancakes and, I mean, everything is so good.
So when do you take it out of the pot? I mean, you keep adding to the, until you get it.
Till I get enough that I want, and when all of them look translucent and really bright, they have a bright, beautiful
orange,
and they look like they've been simmered, like they're cooked, but
so
they hold
put
their
them
shape.
In a jar,
yeah, I just put them in a canning jar with a lid, and then you can also add just for a little acidity, you can add a little bit of lemon juice, mm-hmm. And I have some in my pantry that aren't even sealed. That I put. Oh, here's another good thing you can do. You can make a little more alcoholic. You can add triple sec, which is an orange flavor, or you can add Grand Marnier, mm-hmm. and then you have these really wonderful another use for them in drinks or mm-hmm. in your baking
or in
salads.
Like Christmas time, those kinds of puddings and breads that are
or eating it with a spoon.
Or that.
Yeah. Know, exactly. And one of the best things you can do is you just put them on a some sort of tray where they can drip out a little bit.
Yeah.
And get them just be like just slightly tacky.
Sticky.
And then
sticky.
Uh-huh. And then get your tweezers out and dip them in dark chocolate.
Chocolate. Oh.
Put them on parchment,
there
let them
go.
Cool. It's
there
so
go.
Good.
Oh, yum.
I could eat those by the dozen.
Well, speaking of eating by the dozen, this is my first taste of rhubarb this season, and it's exquisite, Tom.
Thank you.
It's really, really good, and I love the idea that you put the orange in there.
Yeah, it really works, doesn't it?
You know, I'm a rhubarb purist, really, as we've talked about this before. And people say, oh, rhubarb strawberry pie, and I'm kind of like, no. I like strawberries. I love rhubarb. But they need to have their own. They need to stay in their own lane.
They need each wing. Yeah,
you know.
This complements though.
This works.
The orange complements.
It's
amazing.
Thank you.
Ooh. It's really good.
My thinking was, I really like rhubarb. There's also an earthiness to rhubarb that mm-hmm. we could kind of tone down a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I thought that the orange, you know, the orange peel and orange slice would.
Well, you invented something really wonderful. You better patent that, I think.
Okay.
You
know, call in Washington, D.C. tomorrow.
It's really good. Mm-hmm. It's really, really tasty, and the consistency is beautiful, and the color is gorgeous. I just can't thank you enough. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Well, I'm glad you called me and said, bring something.
You know, did you have to say that?
I did. Well, Linda said she was going to bring
a
treat.
I didn't know she was going to bring you.
It's the treat.
Thank you.
I told Truman that since we had this emergency meeting this today instead off our regular schedule, I asked him if he could please engineer. And I said, I'll bring treats. And I was thinking rhubarb treats because we were going to talk about rhubarb. And then I found out I had to go to Tacoma. And mm-hmm. there was no way I could do anything. No way. So I asked Tom if he could do it. And he said, sure.
And so, I did. Thumbs up, sure, on the text.
And so that is... No, you were nicer than that.
I was very nice.
You were very nice. You said you'd be happy to do that. Mm-hmm. And so there's the rest of the story. And the other thing that you must know about Tom Conway is that you must not tell him anything you don't want everyone to know unless you say, don't say anything. Then you can trust him totally.
Exactly. We have a COS is our acronym, yes. Cone of Silence.
Cone of Silence. We do have that.
We do.
Yeah, and...
I can keep a secret. If I know it to be a secret, I'll keep it.
No, this wasn't a secret, really. It was just sort of a... It was a tale to tease. It was a teasing tale.
If it will thoroughly embarrass my co-host, I will definitely tell you.
You will definitely do that. I know you will. So I want to talk some more about rhubarb, please.
Okay.
Yes.
So do you have any other uses for rhubarb other than like rhubarb cake or rhubarb... pie.
There's one I started doing about 10 years or so ago where I would make, roast the mm-hmm. rhubarb mm-hmm. and then I would sort of strain it, the oozy goozy mm-hmm. stuff, because I didn't like the stringy part mm. because I put it in ice cream. I had roasted rhubarb ice cream. So just basically any vanilla ice cream recipe and I'd roast like 2 or 3 cups of rhubarb and mm-hmm. then puree it and then put that in there. And that's really nice.
That is really good. And you know, my mom had a huge rhubarb patch, huge, because there was a little creek that ran down way beyond the house. And you know, if rhubarb, it loves its water and it was a huge success. Anyway, we used to just have rhubarb sauce. Mm-hmm. And put it on the oatmeal or just eat a bowl of rhubarb sauce.
Was this in Montana? Mm-hmm. That was a thing in my grandparents in Indiana.
They would always have this sauce on
rhubarb the stove.
Rhubarb sauce. Yeah. It was always there.
How do you make the rhubarb sauce?
It's just sugar. Just water, a little bit of water and sugar, maybe some cinnamon if you want to, but we never did that.
And sometimes they'd put orange juice in there.
Sometimes they did, but you just, you know, chop up the rhubarb, put it mm-hmm. in a pan, mm-hmm. add a little water, not mm-hmm. too much, because rhubarb's pretty watery itself, mm-hmm. and then decide how much sugar you want in it, and you can always put more in later, you know, and just watch it bubble, and then when it gets kind of... It'll thicken itself. It doesn't get thick as if you had put cornstarch in it. We never did that. It's just a nice topping for ice cream. We ate it on pancakes. We ate it in our oatmeal. It's so good. And then a few years ago, I discovered a recipe that was shocking because, you know, I keep touting the fact that I'm a rhubarb purist. Uh-huh. Well, this is not the rhubarb, pure rhubarb recipe. It is rhubarb ketchup.
What?
Yes, I'm telling you. No, listen to me.
Sorry, I had to get my eyes back in my head.
Yeah. So the makeup of it is, and I'll put this on the web for you, is brown sugar, rhubarb, a can of tomatoes. It's mm-hmm. like 3 or 4 cups of rhubarb. It's mostly rhubarb, but there's a little bit of tomato in it, some brown sugar, some vinegar, some onions.
Nice.
And it's all cooked. You cook it, cook it, cook it. And it makes this incredible condiment that I serve on grilled chicken mm-hmm. or on sandwiches. It's so good. I haven't had it on a hamburger. You know, you think about
it. When was the last time you made it?
Is it quite liquid?
Last year.
Is it quite liquid like ketchup is? Or
it's a little thicker than that.
Oh, okay.
It's more like a... It's a cross between ketchup and chutney.
Yeah.
It's
Oh, so is it chunky then?
Can be. Yeah, it depends on how much you cook it, you know, but you can, and you can puree it and make it smooth. Hmm. And I've done that too.
It's like ka-chutney.
Ka-chutney. Yeah. But anyway, so that I just wanted to fess up that I do cook something that is not pure rhubarb, but on a piece of grilled chicken, it's so good.
You're going to put that on the rest?
I will. I will. Thanks. Yeah, it's very good. And it's just the right amount of sweetness. You know, you're surprised by the brown sugar taste with rhubarb. And then, of course, we just have our rhubarb pie and, like you just said, rhubarb ice cream.
Yeah, I was going to make a pie for us today, but I just didn't have... It's that thing where... As my sister said, making a pie is not like making brownies.
It just takes a while.
I had to make the dough and chill it and And plus, I had to go get manure and I had to, you know.
And we didn't want you to get the two mixed up.
No, we didn't. What's this lovely crunchy stuff on top?
what a nice compote.
This is particularly really earthy rhubarb.
Yeah, so I guess I just would like to encourage people to play with rhubarb a little bit because it's really, it's an amazing, is it a vegetable? Is it a fruit?
It's a vegetable.
Vegetable,
I
think.
It's an amazing thing to eat.
So I have a question for
you. Yes.
Do you have a special way to keep your brown sugar?
Well, yeah, but I seal it up. I have put a piece of bread in it. I've put an apple, slice of apple in it to soften it.
A few years ago, we got a container that has a little ceramic terracotta disc.
Oh, that thing. Yes, I've seen those.
You soak that in water. Mm-hmm. You put it in. You can put brown sugar that is crystallized to chunks.
Yeah.
And leave it in there for several days, and it softens and becomes
Isn't
wonderful.
That lovely? Yeah. There's really nothing more irritating than trying to bake with that kind of sugar. And in Colorado, when I lived in Colorado, the air is so dry. Every brown sugar, even in the original package from the grocery store, was chunky and crispy and hard. And I thought I died and went to heaven when I came to Oregon and Washington, because that happens so rarely here if you keep it sealed up. But I've seen those. I haven't used them. It sounds like a really good trick. Any more rhubarb talk for you, Mr. Conway?
No, but I did have a... I did have a tip this week. I didn't want to go. I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about it.
Okay.
It was one about sauteing mushrooms.
Oh,
it's a little
right.
Bit
we
off
talked
and left
about
fields.
That. Well, yeah, but no, that's okay. Please. So end of subject, end of rhubarb.
Yeah. Goodbye, rhubarb.
Goodbye, rhubarb.
We'll pick you up next week. but I was, because I thought this was such a game changer, and this is something that we all do, that we don't do, that we should do. And I saw it with my own eyes. So you know when you're sauteing mushrooms, and there's so many dishes we use sauteed mushrooms for, from spaghetti to, you know...
Stir fry
to put it over your steak and lobster, you know, all that stuff.
Fancy.
No, I was just dreaming of 1985. Yeah. 1985 called and said, remember this. So anyway, the mushrooms, what you do is you're sauteing them, you know, just put a little knob of butter in there to get it going. And then you put about a quarter, usually what we do, sorry, I'm trying to collect my thoughts here. Usually when you saute mushrooms, the thought is keep all moisture and liquid out of it because they have so much.
Yeah.
Now, the thing I watched was talking about the science behind it, which I can't explain. But the science says if you add water initially, like a quarter cup to your mushrooms, and you stir them and you add it on a relatively medium high heat, it does something where it breaks down the mushroom through steam, which doesn't happen when you saute, and it releases all the liquid in the mushrooms. And they evaporate with water. And so they cook quicker and they're drier and they're more meaty when you put a little bit of water in your sauté.
It just doesn't make any sense to me.
No,
exactly.
Did you try it?
I did.
And?
And it works.
Successful.
Yeah. Yeah, I just
How interesting.
Yeah, I had it in a sauté pan and then I threw the water in there I think I might have done a third of a cup of water because I probably had it. One of those little cartons of sliced mushrooms and maybe a half cup, third cup. And then I put the lid on it and I just let them steam and at a high and sizzle. And then about 5-6 minutes later, I took the lid off and then I started stirring. I added another knob of butter. Yeah, yeah.
So at this point, were they dry? Was the water evaporated?
Yeah.
When you took the lid off?
When I took the, it wasn't evaporated, but there was more water in there from.
Than there had been?
There had been. And then what happened is it had been released from the mushrooms.
Right.
And then it evaporated quickly.
So then you put the butter in the water?
Yeah, once it gets down to about, yeah.
So, but you start with a little butter just to get it going, right?
Yeah, that I do, just so it doesn't stick to the pan.
And then you're using fresh mushrooms. You're not using dried or anything.
Yeah, no, these are fresh, sliced mushrooms.
Well, you know, Julia Child had a thing about the way people did mushrooms, and she was very adamant about the fact that we crowd them too much.
Oh, yeah.
That we need to have only a single layer in the pan of mushrooms and a higher heat than people are used to using and watch them and turn them. But she never said anything about the water. I just think that's amazing. I'd like to try that. Well, she may not have known.
You know, I think the first place I saw it was on America's Test Kitchen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so that was...
They're testing.
200 times, I'm sure.
At least. Yeah. That's great.
But that's a really good technique. That we don't do, but now we can.
So then how did you eat your mushrooms?
Well, funny you should mention. I bought the mushrooms specifically for doing this, but I had no purpose for them.
Okay,
you know?
Yeah.
So But what I really like is I like mushrooms and omelets. So I had, you know, after that, I could have had one huge omelet, or I saved it for two servings for omelets with, I had some Beecher's cheese, that beautiful white cheese,
that white cheddar.
Mm-hmm. Oh, geez, Louise Mildred. It's so good.
Yeah.
And so I made an omelet with those mushrooms and that cheese. Oh, and then I gilded the lily with caramelized onions. Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Ooh, that sounds good. That's dinner even.
That's what it was. It was. Yeah. I just didn't want to go to the store. I didn't want to make another sandwich. Mm-hmm. I thought, oh, let's do this.
Yeah. That sounds really good.
In fact, Gus, my dog, has been... I sound so ridiculous, but I have to special order his dog food because he has allergies. Because what dog now doesn't have an allergy?
Right. And what person doesn't?
Exactly. I'm surprised he's not gluten free. But anyway,
I think he is gluten free.
But I had to order his dog food, and it was my mistake. I didn't order quickly enough, special order it. So we ran out of, a day early, we ran out of dog food.
Oh, no.
So. He does get these weird allergies with grains and dirt and certain meats, where he salivates profusely.
Oh.
So it's a really, the poor baby, you know. But I'm going around wrapping up his, putting a towel around his face. You know, he looks like he's getting a steam bath, you know, because he's drooling so much. But I will. But I found something he doesn't have a reaction to, which is scrambled eggs, and I have all these great scrambled eggs from my chickens.
Right.
And right before I left, I had to go pick up the dog food, but he hasn't had it yet. But he was hungry. It was dinner time. So I made him three scrambled eggs.
Mm-hmm.
And he just, like, if a dog could moan, he's practicing.
He was in heaven.
He loves, and his coat gets all shiny.
Oh, did he get any mushrooms?
No mushrooms.
Oh, just eggs.
I didn't know about those.
Now, he is a bulldog, right?
He is an English bulldog,
so don't you have to be a little careful?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, about farting?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. flatulence.
Passing gas.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That's one of those things where I just do it to make my sister squeal. And even though we're in our close to 70s, when she visits, I'll go, oh, do you want a little potato salad, Gus? And then she goes, don't you dare feed that dog.
Yeah. Well, we're kind of running out of time here, and I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for covering me on the treats, Tom.
Oh, you know, you just call out my name, and you know wherever I am, I'll come running.
Oh, bless your heart. It's that's really some of the... You know, I've been off the sweets for a while. Since I baked all those pies, it was time to stop eating sweets.
Yeah.
So it's been about a month, I think.
Next time we can talk about the worst brownies known to man. I made them.
Did you? Yeah. I've made some bad ones,
too. It was like overcorrecting what you made a mistake with.
Oh.
And it ends up
not
good.
Yeah. Well, you'll have better luck next time.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening, everyone. It was really fun, a great pleasure to see you, Tom. And thank you, Truman, for your help. And color commentary, as we always say.
That's right.
And we will see you in a couple of weeks.
Love
well,
you,
I'll
Mina.
See you next week,
yeah.
actually. So.
Okay, take care,
everybody.
Alrighty,
take care. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Can I have more cake?
Yeah.